Tonight's guest, John Adams, National Council of Churches Coordinator for the Poor People's Campaign at Resurrection City, Washington, D.C. You speak for yourself and ask your questions directly by calling Night Call's national phone number, area code 212-749-3311. Night Call's host in New York City is Del Shields.
Good evening. This is Del Shields. Our guest tonight was to have been Mr. Bayard Rustin, the executive director of the A. Philip Randolph Foundation, organizer of the 1963 March on Washington, and just resigned organizer of the June 19th Poor People's Demonstration in Washington. Mr. Rustin submitted his resignation earlier today and felt his appearance on tonight's program might be inappropriate. He will appear at a later date to talk about black leadership. Our guest instead will be John P. Adams, liaison of the Poor People's Campaign for the National Council of Churches. Because of his position, the Reverend Adams has taken part in most of the meetings and discussions involving Mr. Rustin's resignation and is about as well informed as anyone on the present state of affairs. In fact, he has taken part in almost all of the planning sessions and day-to-day decision-making concerned with the foundation and maintenance of Resurrection City. Good evening, Reverend Adams.
Good evening, Mr. Shields.
Reverend, will the Poor People's Campaign be able to stage its June 19th demonstration?
Well, I believe that the mobilization or the Solidarity Day is going to move ahead. I believe the planning will proceed. It is possible, I believe, that there may be a change of date even yet, but there will be an opportunity given for a nationwide witness, a dramatic kind of support of the Poor People's Campaign. There has been indication that there is a real desire across the country among many people, churchmen and persons representing other groups, to come to Washington if they're wanted, if they're needed, and to make their own witness in support of this campaign. And I believe that there will be such an opportunity given and that there will be clear direction given relationship to this, so that these people can, on a massive basis, be able to say that there is support for such a movement of this as this one, which is nonviolent in its orientation and tactic, and has some goals set before it, which would be not only beneficial to the poor, but to the vitality of the nation at large.
Mr. Rustin said in a press conference today that he felt that one of the reasons for his resigning the position was that he did not have enough time or would not have enough time to be able to organize a massive and successful mobilization by June 19th. Inasmuch as Reverend Abernathy has appointed Mr. Sterling Tucker his successor, do you feel Mr. Tucker will have sufficient time?
Well, I think that time is definitely a factor. But in a movement like this one, I believe that when there is the spontaneity across the country that there is, and the kind of support that could be rallied somewhat instantaneously in many ways, that time may in certain instances be able to be shortcutted. And I don't say that in order that any of us can be irresponsible about this. But as someone has said, the funeral of Dr. Martin Luther King, which was attended by, according to the Atlanta Constitution, more than 200 people marched in addition to those who watched. And this certainly was not something that had long planning, you know, not wanting to be facetious about something so serious and about which so many of us are still and will be forever sorrowful. But nevertheless, such an event where there was a nonviolent witness and a dramatic demonstration of determination to proceed, this was something that was created almost overnight.
Another reason, as we gathered from the press conference that Mr. Rustin held today, it was stated that some of the leaders in Resurrection City, had assailed him after he issued his own statement of goals. They felt that his goals were less demanding than that of the campaign. Would you care to elaborate on that?
Well, as I understand it, of course, Mr. Rustin's description of the goals were those that he felt were feasible in light of the conduct and the kind of legislation that has been passed by this Congress. And of course, there is real merit in being very realistic about what can be done legislatively within a certain period of time in this government. But at the same time, the movement itself has to not only place before this government its appeal, but has to engage in an educational program not only for the government, but for society at large and for citizens across the country. And for this reason, there is certainly a basis for the goals remaining indefinite and remaining those that represent solutions that are proportionate to the seriousness and the size of the problems. And so for this reason, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference and other representatives of the poor and the various segments of the poverty population believe that it is their primary responsibility to lead in challenging the nation and in evoking a moral response that would permit there to be the climate and the environment in which the government can act to alleviate those conditions that have frustrated the hundreds and thousands of people in this country, and which several responsible governmental reports have determined as being the basis for the kind of violence that we are suffering with and so deeply regretting in this nation.
This is Night Call in New York, and our telephone number is area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. We welcome your phone call, and if you're calling long distance, we'll be more than happy to pay for your call. Reverend Adams, we're going to welcome our first call of the evening from radio station WRVR. Mr. Riceberg is listening to Night Call.
Yes,
sir. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Yes, I'd like to ask the Reverend what he feels about the militant situation in the Poor People's March, when they see that almost nothing is being done at the time right now, except maybe speeches in front of the Congress and similar things to that, but nothing in the form of action has occurred so far.
Well, I think that, of course, those who have come to Washington have come to work. I mean, the poor who have come here representatively have come not to camp out or to be tourists or to have a vacation, but you're right, they have come to make a point. And they do want action, and when they mean action, they don't mean just physical action. They mean action in the government, and for them to believe that the kind of strategy in which they are engaging is beginning to have a product. And I think that there's every indication at this point to believe that some of the most militant elements, and militant can still be nonviolent, as I'm sure you know, that those who feel that their nonviolence must be productive are joining together the various segments of the minority groups. And I say that because there are several minority groups involved here in the campaign, including American Indians and Appalachian whites and Mexican Americans and blacks, of course, and Puerto Ricans and so on, that they believe that that it's at this point that they must join with one another. And I might append and say that this is therefore a most historic and unique movement, which comes at a time when we are struggling in this nation with our divisions and with our fragmentation, that here's a rather historic manifestation of the ability of groups to join together for a common cause in the American tradition. And I believe that the militancy at this point is being channeled very constructively into a coalition that will be able to continue this campaign, and not just for the cause of blacks, and that was not the intention of Martin Luther King either, of course, but for all segments of the poor. So I think that militancy, as far as the campaign itself, is going to be channeled creatively, constructively, and hopefully productively.
Yes, and I just like to add that even Martin Luther King said that he would bring Washington to a halt if the poor people's requests weren't answered, and therefore I just hope that something like this does happen.
Well, may I comment on that, Mr. Shields?
Yes, you may, sir.
I'd like to say that, of course, Dr. King and other representatives of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference recognize that it may be necessary to, as Dr. King called it, engage in the shock treatment, meaning that although none of us want to be shocked by electricity, sometimes, as in psychiatry, this is therapeutic. And I think Dr. King believed that it may be necessary for the poor who come here to be willing to engage in activities that, on the surface at least, would seem to be disruptive, but which would be disruptive only, you know, to the point that it would call the attention of this country and of its people to what must be done. And of course, Dr. King believed that this was a clear alternative to the kinds of shock that we get when our cities burn and when our people are murdered, such as we have all so regretfully felt in the last 48 hours.
Mr. Riesberg, we want to thank you very much for calling. We have some other people who are standing by. Thank you very much, sir. This is Night Call in New York. Our telephone number is area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. If you are calling long distance, we'll be more than happy to pay for your call. We have not as yet been able to figure out a way to accept the collect calls, and we should have that satisfied, I hope, by sometime next week. In the meantime, if you'd like to call long distance, we'll be more than happy to accept your call. Reverend Adams, we'll take our next call from San Diego, California. Mr. Bullock is listening to Night Call over radio station KOGO-FM. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Hello.
Good evening, Mr. Bullock.
Good evening, sir. My question is this, please. A number of people around the San Diego area have indicated in casual conversation that when whites do not have normal contact with black people and yet would be interested in establishing contact in the light of the racial problem and to go ahead and do their part towards personally bettering their relationships and secondly, through example, setting a good example to the rest of the community, what would you suggest to alleviate this problem when they don't have Negro neighbors or Latin American neighbors and so forth? And yet, because this is a problem for a lot of people in my acquaintance and myself, because we do not have, in the normal course of working relationships and so forth, contact with Negro people. And when you want to approach them, they begin to think, well, you're actually do-gooders and this sort of thing, and yet you're genuinely interested in trying to know them and trying to get involved in their problems to eliminate prejudice and take positive steps toward establishing good relationships in the community.
Well, I agree with you that we are in a period in which it is extremely difficult for many of us to make those kinds of contacts that we would feel would not be manipulative or exploitive or which would not really deeply respect the person with whom we want to have that contact.
Mm-hmm.
It is possible that as we try to seek these out, that it would appear as if we are simply trying to salve our consciences. You know, almost anything we do now,
yes,
whatever color we are, there are going to be certain uncomfortable feelings and some real serious difficulties, which I think we're simply going to have to endure.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, to use the very famous quotation of Arnold Toynbee, the historian, he said, you know, we had thousands of years to learn how to hate one another, Now, apparently, we have just a comparatively brief time in which to really learn how to love one another.
Reverend Adams, if you'd be kind enough to hold it, we are going to depart for station identification, and then we'll be right back. And Mr. Bullock, if you want to hold on, we'll return to you. In New York, this is Night Call.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest John Adams after station identification.
Call it a social pressure valve. The voice of the ghetto, the voice of disgust, the voice of hope. Call it what you will, it's the voice of the people. Night Call lets people talk, and experts on the phone everywhere in the country or world offer answers to some of the problems. Having a heart-to-heart squawk. At least it gets people talking, first about their problems, and eventually to each other. Night Call has a potential cast of 200 million Americans. We now cover 30 stations in 27 cities and Washington, D.C. It could just be the most important listening post on the air today because it starts people talking. A program you should listen to, a forum to speak for yourself. If we don't start talking to each other, we'll end up shouting, and there's no telling where we'll wind up after that. Night Call, every weeknight on this station.
This is Night Call. Speak for yourself by calling 212-749-3311. Our subject tonight, the Poor People's Campaign. Our guest, John Adams. Our host, Del Shields.
This is Del Shields in New York, and our guest tonight from Washington, D.C., Reverend John P. Adams, liaison for the Poor People's Campaign for the National Council of Churches. And our listener call-in tonight from San Diego, California, Mr. Bullock, and our telephone number here in New York, area code 212-749-3311. That's 749-3311. If you'd like to call long distance, we'll be more than happy to pay for your call. Reverend Adams,
yes,
you may proceed, sir.
Yes, I'm here.
I would like to get back to his question. I didn't answer it at all. I believe that what we need to say is this. First of all, you sound like a person who has been working in terms of effectuating those kinds of laws and seeing that they are practiced where there is freedom of residence, and I think this is a first step, and we don't need to elaborate on that, but that would help many of us who have been white and isolated and I think therefore culturally and socially deprived of this kind of contact that you're describing. But I think on the other hand, there are organizations and there are groups that are attempting to more naturally create those climates and those opportunities for contact that will permit people to become acquainted and acquainted hopefully in action toward the achievement of some social good within the community itself. Now, for instance, of course, I think of the Poor People's Campaign because it not only has been functioning here in Washington, but in many cities across the country, there were people who really had not worked together before who were cooperating with one another in furnishing hospitality for the poor as they passed through the cities. And, of course, there are other waves of poor that will be coming to Washington, and this is an opportunity for cities where this applies. But I think that here in the Poor People's Campaign, I've seen sitting around one little shanty in Resurrection City, Appalachian whites, Mexican Americans, American Indians, and blacks talking with one another. And they said that it took, a few nights before they could even feel that they could talk with one another without just having suspicion. So I feel that, I know this has to be general, but I think in a city like San Diego, that if you contacted the various religious groups, those that are ecumenically operating there, that they would be able to put before you some activities and some kinds of organizational efforts in which you would have this possibility.
Oh, good. Thank you very much, sir. I think this is a very forward step.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Right.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York. Our telephone number is area code 212-749-3311. We welcome your calls, we welcome your conversation and your ideas. Area code 212-749-3311. Reverend Adams, we are going to take our next call from Mr. Martin, who is listening to Night Call over radio station KVOW in Seattle, Washington. Welcome to Night Call, Mr. Martin.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Mr. Adams, I'm just going to say, first off, that people here in Seattle have something they call Still Another Way, SAW, which is a bunch of private people who are not affiliated with any church or anything, and they are just meeting together informally to discuss this problem with the man from San Diego, that since they were not... living or working with or around people from minorities.
That's beautiful.
And this is working out better than anticipated, and it seems the communication is really opening up. But the question I was going to ask you, please, is, now, sympathetic with the Poor People's March is in the main. However, how is this guaranteed annual wage? This is what seems to be the big bugaboo that most people have against the civil rights activists and the Poor People's March. In other words, for instance, now my income tax is what's going to be paying for that, and how can you justify to me that I should influence my congressman to approve this raised income tax? In other words, for this $3,000 annual income.
Right. Well, I think, although I'm not an expert on guaranteed annual income, but I think that we need to say this, that in many ways, this is, of course, already costing us, if we want to start with that, and I'm not sure that is what we want to start with, but that there is a cost that is already being paid by way of partial and fragmented welfare programs at every level of government, and also that, of course, we pay for some of the real social liabilities that have come from the perpetuation of poverty in a nation that has the kind of productive capacity and economic potential that we have. For instance, it has been established, as you know, that such a program as this would probably cost around $30 billion a year, which is roughly, of course, what it costs us to finance the Vietnam War. And this is not to get into that particular discussion, except to say that the American economy, according to studies, it is indicated that it grows, its gross national product grows approximately $40 billion a year. So if we just took into consideration the natural growth of the American economy and recognized that a portion of this growth potential could be devoted to the eradication of poverty itself, we then could see some of the rationale for it. And I think we also need to say that guaranteed annual income could then make our nation even more productive, because it could give people who have sunk into despair with the experience of their own lives and those of their fathers and their mothers, we could give them a stake in the future.
Oh, there's no argument there.
No. You're wondering how we could pay for it.
Right. In other words, I've heard Dr. Abernathy say this very thing, that, in other words, he doesn't want to take anything away from anybody that they don't want to give. In other words, this should more be a Christian thing, but he does believe that for this $3,000 guaranteed annual income. And
right.
I haven't heard any real concrete proposals on who's going to pay for it. And this is the important thing, I think.
Well, I'm not an economist, but I think that there have been, and I think that there will be, a growing number of people clear across the whole political spectrum that will be gradually accepting this as the next possible step in the American economy. And I think that we will find the means by which it's be able to be done, because not only of the necessity, but because of our capacity. Now, in terms of what it may cost me as a taxpayer also, I believe that I would be much more willing to see an increase in my taxes for something of this sort than I would be, for instance, to see some of the other kinds of increases that affect my own budget and my own tax payments. And, for instance, in a city like our own here in Washington, D.C., when this city is raked by riots and when it has the degree of violence that has been suffered here, particularly this spring, this affects a lot of things economically. I'm sure you know that. not only the restaurants and the hotels and some of the other businesses that ordinarily this time of the year would be having a tremendous tourist industry pass through here, but also it affects the homeowner, such as myself. It affects the average taxpayer. And I think that when we recognize that our domestic problems and our urban problems have reached the seriousness that they have, I believe we will come to the place where we will see this as being economically feasible too. Now, I wish I could give you some more precise figures, but I think that if you care to drop a line to Night Call, I'm sure that I could refer your request to the people who can furnish you with the kind of bibliography and actual copies of materials that might very well answer your question.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. This is Night Call in New York. Our telephone number is area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. Our guest calling in from Washington, D.C., Reverend John P. Adams, who's working with the National Council of Churches and working in Resurrection City. We have some additional calls, Reverend Adams, and we'll take our next call right here from New York from Mr. Wormworth, who's listening to Night Call from radio station WLIB.
I didn't catch his name.
Mr. Wormworth.
All right, Wormworth?
Right, sir.
Right.
Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Thank you. Hello?
Good evening, Mr. Wormworth.
First, I'd like to say that I think this program is very unusual in keeping with the tempo of our times, and I think it's very timely and helpful. And one thing with the Poor People's Campaign I'm concerned about is what the leaders of the Poor People's Campaign or the administration of the Poor People's Campaign, if you want to call it that, feel about the obstinacy of quite a few members of Congress, the conservatives, if you want to call them that, and the Southerners, generally speaking, although I know there are quite a few Southerners who are just and honorable men, if you want to put it that way.
Sure.
I'm very concerned about that.
Right. Well, I would say this, that of course they believe that one of the reasons that a Poor People's Campaign was made necessary was because of an unwillingness, for whatever reason, for the responsive arm of the government, meaning the representatives in the Congress, the representatives both in the House and the Senate, to recognize that here was a crisis of such proportion that it called for a kind of vast action on their part, just as I keep saying or keep referring to a quotation of Dr. Kenneth Clark's in Harvard, the psychologist who was quoted at length in the Civil Disorders Report, where he said that if there, you know, when there was the Pearl Harbor incident, this nation responded to the crisis. Now, we couldn't do it all at once, but we recognized that we were in a battle. And yet there doesn't seem to be, we're in the same kind
the
same of
crisis. Responsiveness.
Pardon?
There doesn't seem to be the same responsiveness.
That's right.
By a long shot.
There doesn't seem to be the awareness that we are in the middle of a different kind of battle, and that it is possible for Congress to take those kinds of actions that are not just repressive, and which call for some kind of military control, but ones that could readily furnish some of the answers that this nation needs to furnish if we are to continue to be the democracy that we want to be. So I'd say this, that Congress too has to be educated at many points, and some are honest enough to say this.
The members of Congress, yeah.
Just as the nation itself does. And I also would believe that many congressmen are willing to act and ready to act when they feel that their constituents are ready to support them. And this, of course, throws the responsibility back on us and all of us clear across this country.
I would venture to say the news media, too.
Yes, I think we're all going to have our responsibility and be able to lend our hand. And that's what, by the way, is what the leadership of this Poor People's Campaign says, and that is there is something for everybody to do.
Reverend Adams, we'll have to interrupt for station identification, and then we'll be coming right back. Mr. Wormwright, thank you so much for calling, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Wormwright.
This is Night Call in New York.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest John Adams after station identification.
In our city and state, and all across the United States, people are talking about trouble, black and white trouble. Some call it racial tension, or see poverty as the real problem, or say law and order has given way to anarchy in our streets. Most people agree, at least, that there is a crisis, and we are a people with many unanswered questions. This station believes you deserve to ask your own questions and get some answers, or at least opinions, from people who should know what they're talking about. So we bring you Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show where you ask your questions and express your opinions to leaders such as John Lindsay, Ralph Abernathy, John Gardner, Stokely Carmichael, and Sergeant Shriver. Night Call, the new nationwide radio forum on important issues facing you and the rest of the nation. Night Call, each weeknight.
This is Night Call. Speak for yourself by calling 212-749-3311. Our subject tonight, the Poor People's Campaign. Our guest, John Adams. Our host, Del Shields.
This is Del Shields in New York, and our guest tonight from Washington, D.C., Reverend John P. Adams, who works with the National Council of Churches in Resurrection City in Washington. Reverend Adams, we've heard quite a bit about Resurrection City, but I'd like to dwell for just a few moments on some of the people in Resurrection City. Who are the people? Where did they come from? Are there different kinds of poor people there in Resurrection City? And what were some of the motivating factors that made these people leave their homes throughout the country and decide to go to Washington and become people who are living in Resurrection City?
Well, I think to look at Resurrection City is to see a cross-section of the poor. And, of course, although, as you may have read, people across the country may have seen pictures for the past couple of weeks or more, the city has been bogged down in mud, mired in the aftermath of continuous rain. And for that reason, it took on a very dismal appearance. And yet, as Dr. Andrew Young said, even last night, he said that, although there was tremendous concern for the continued discomfort and even suffering of the people who had to live in Resurrection City, they recognized that this very setting was certainly representative, and that this is the kind of setting that most of the poor have to endure. Their streets aren't paved. When it does rain, there is mud, and so on. Now, there is a cross-section of the poor, meaning that there are old and young. There are various colors and races. There are handicapped, and there are persons who have severe kinds of liabilities. But at the same time, there is a common determination. They're there for a purpose, and there's something beautiful about it, even though it is also difficult to see the mud and so on right there on the mall, right at the foot of the Lincoln Memorial.
Reverend Adams, how is the morale of the residents in Resurrection City? How are they holding up?
Well, I'd say that, it's like any other kind of city that is under some kinds of severe problems. There are some who have left, and not all of those who have left disgruntled or in further despair. Some had to leave because they had commitments within their families or some other personal problems back home. But there were some who left because they didn't think that it was going to be productive, or the suffering was too much in addition to what they already had. Jokingly, some of those who stayed through it all said that those who left were middle class, and that the poor were the ones who really stayed. However, the morale, I think, in spite of everything, has remained amazingly good.
We'll welcome some more calls, Reverend Adams. Our telephone number in New York, area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. We'll welcome Mrs. McGoy from Westchester, New York, who is listening to Night Call over radio station WLIB right here in New York. Welcome to Night Call.
This is Mrs. McGoy.
Hello.
The one question that I think is most important, and we've sort of touched on it in lots of ways, worrying about the morale of citizens of Resurrection City and the cost to the nation in dollars and so forth. But the most important thing is, how are we going to reassure Dr. Abernathy that he is correct in spite of this conflict between himself and Rustin? I have immense respect for Rustin and A. Philip Randolph.
Of course.
But it's his morale and his confidence that he is right that I'm concerned about, because this seems to be the implication of this most recent discussion.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that Dr. Abernathy does feel the burden that you've described, and that is, as I heard him say in a meeting night before last, that he bears this awful burden, but he does it willingly. He recognizes, as he said, that almost no matter what happens or who is named as coordinator, that ultimately the blame or perhaps even the success was going to fall on his shoulders, and if that's what you mean.
It's even more than that. I think that he felt for a brief moment that without King, he didn't have the powers that he needed and the broad moral awakening of shriveled morality and humanity would require the functional help of people like Rustin. He is Abernathy is absolutely correct that the broad appeal to morality and to humanity is far stronger than the most detailed sequence of getting buses into the city.
Mm-hmm.
And the strength is there, but we need to reassure him most intimately on this, and how do we do it?
Well, I agree with you that across this land, we need to make known to the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and I think to the various representatives of the poor, that we are with them, and we recognize there are problems. Dr. Abernathy recognizes there are problems. The deep respect that the Southern Christian Leadership Conference has for Mr. Rustin is unaffected by this. They simply believe that they have to continue the Poor People's Campaign in the direction that it's going, and that the poor themselves have to speak for the poor, you see.
We want to assure him, though, that he's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say this.
He should be assured that his concepts are really right.
If you want to know specifically how this can be done, if you're asking how do you get a message to him...
Oh, no, I have SCLC address.
That isn't what you meant. Right. That isn't what you meant.
Well, I think that we've got to stop challenging him on the cost in taxes and all of these other functional things. There are organizations who do work on that thesis, and certainly the A. Philip Randolph Foundation does, and they're quite successful.
That's right.
But the concepts that were employed by King and were taken up by Abernathy are significantly more sophisticated and philosophical than those functional attitudes of the A. Philip Randolph Foundation. And they both have a place. And Mr. Abernathy should be assured that we respect his and that he is the proper representative of that function that he has decided upon and that he's carrying out in agreement with his memory with King.
I think that is beautifully said, and I am in full agreement with you.
I hope he realizes that we do respect this infinitely.
Well, I would say that... if there is a way in which you personally can help to interpret this to to the people in your own community and can help to spread that kind of perspective that you've just expressed.
I'm the great middle class white, the more I talk, the less effect I have.
Well, I think
Mrs.
we
McCoy?
Have to take the chance on that one and proceed.
Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
And keep talking.
Thank you, ma'am.
Bye-bye.
This is Night Call in New York. Our telephone number is area code 212-749-3311. That's 749-3311. Our Night Call guest tonight is Reverend John P. Adams of the National Council of Churches, who is working in Resurrection City, and he's talking to us direct from Washington, D.C. We'll take our next call from South Bend, Indiana, Mr. Chaffee, who is listening to Night Call from radio station WSBT. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Chaffee.
Thank you. I'm under the impression, from having read the news, that there's somewhere in the area of from $1 to $3 million being used to finance this Poor People's March in Washington. Is that correct?
Well, the amount of money that it costs to bring the poor here or to have them come and to maintain these people while they're here is a figure that is difficult to estimate.
Mm-hmm.
But that you're right, there have been estimates all the way from some hundreds of thousands of dollars up to $3 million. This includes not only what is purchased, but a great deal, of course, that is donated.
Mm-hmm. Well, wouldn't it, of course, regardless of the amount of money being spent, and we'll use a figure of, say, $2 million.
Right.
Now, this $2 million is being spent to bring a march on Washington, in which hundreds of thousands of people, or whatever the numbers are pressuring Congress to enact legislation which many of them are reluctant to do, and some of them are in favor of.
Right.
Now, as I understand, some of the comments of the leadership of the Poor People's March have implied that if Congress does not pass legislation demanded by the Poor People's March, then the militants of the civil rights movement will be allowed to do what they have wanted to do all along. Now, I would be inclined
to... I don't agree with a couple of your assumptions, but go ahead, I'll catch up with you.
Now, I find it hard to understand why an organization such as the National Council of Churches, which is supposed to be a Christian-based group, would support such a project when the churches are supposed to maintain a separation of church and state. Now, the same amount of money, I would think, would be far better invested if the leadership would pick a target ghetto area, some area where there is a large degree of poor people consolidated in one area who do need help. If that same money was taken into this one target area, and used to educate some of these people, to rebuild their homes, to teach them constructive self-help programs.
Mm-hmm.
And if this type of a program were successful,
mm-hmm.
the good Christian people in this country would see the success of this and would want to take a project like this and multiply it many times nationwide through voluntary help programs, which could be instituted through the churches so that there would be no bureaucratic laws, which is always goes along with any government program which has been implemented.
Well, so, may I catch up with you here?
Pardon?
May I catch up with you here? Because
okay.
I hear you saying several things, and I just want to see if I can bring myself up to what you are saying. First
okay.
of all, may I say that we are living in a country that has developed a system of government at every level, and the government has become more sophisticated at every level. We have a federal government to which all of us turn, business, labor, all of us turn, and are benefited by it. And we bring this about by not only our votes for candidates, but we also bring it about by our activities in relationship, or as they are focused upon Washington, meaning not only mail to congressmen, but almost every segment of the population has a lobby in Washington of one type or another.
Mm-hmm.
And the one kind of group that does not have itself represented in Washington, because it cannot afford the kinds of lobbying activity that take place here continuously, are the poor. The poor don't have a lobby because they can't afford lobbying. Consequently, their lobbying has to be pretty much in the form in which we're seeing it take place here now, and that is... Let me finish it, Amay.
Reverend Adams,
yes?
I'm sorry, we'll have to interrupt for station identification,
and
then we'll be coming right back, if you please.
Okay.
In New York, this is Night Call.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest John Adams after station identification.
Black is a red-blooded American color. The black showed the color of his blood in places like Vietnam and Korea and every other all-American battleground since the Revolution. Every time his country calls for help, he hears. But we don't seem to hear him when he calls. If black and white would listen with their hearts, they could hear each other. That's what Night Call is all about. It lets people air their views man to man, color to color, live from phones anywhere in the country. A syringe full of junk bites into black and white skin with the same ruining surge, and a black mother cries over her child just like a white one does. The problems are the same. The characters just have different colors. Night Call's person-to-person nationwide radio hookup lets the black and the white tell it like it is.
This is Night Call. Speak for yourself by calling 212-749-3311. Our subject tonight, the Poor People's Campaign. Our guest, John Adams. Our host, Del Shields.
This is Del Shields back with Night Call, and our guest in Washington, D.C., Reverend John P. Adams, liaisant of the Poor People's Campaign for the National Council of Churches. And our listener call-in is Mr. Chaffee from South Bend, Indiana, listening to Night Call over radio station WSBT. Reverend Adams, you may continue, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I just would like to briefly say that we feel, and when I say we, I mean lots of different kinds of groups, that this is a legitimate kind of lobbying activity which is being conducted by people who up till this time have been largely voiceless. And as Michael Harrington said in his book, The Other America, which had turned on many leaders in this country and made them aware of poverty that does exist, he said that the poor are politically invisible and are powerless. Now, this is an opportunity for the poor not to come and gain a lot of power, but for the country to become acquainted with their problems so that they can help to meet these problems. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
We're going to run short on time for my call, so I'd like to make a couple additional comments and then hang up.
All right, sir.
It's my belief that the average American, or the middle income group of America, tend to be the most generous people that exist, and they're willing to pay a fair load on the tax on taxes to cover important and necessary expenses. Now, of course, my own personal philosophy is that the graduate income tax, which we have today, is a Marxist doctrine and shouldn't be there in the first place, and it's a means which is going to be used to pay for this. And also, second, the guaranteed annual income is also one of Marx's original philosophies. But the point that I want to make is that, to me, it's an indefensible position for a church-oriented group to attempt to pressure government into passing legislation which is not desired by the majority of the people.
I think you misunderstand.
There's pressure being applied from both the bottom and from the top, but the middle-income people really have little opportunity here to voice their opinion on legislation which is currently before Congress.
Right,
we can change this during the next election, but we have no voice until then.
May I say,
put a stop to this.
Mr. Chaffee, we're going to have to move on, and we allow Reverend Adams to answer you.
One more comment, as I would encourage, and I'm fully in favor of helping the poor people, don't get me wrong, but I think the best way to help the poor people is to teach them
to do for themselves because welfare simply perpetuates welfare.
You are right. They're not interested in welfare. Go ahead.
And the guaranteed annual income is welfare.
I disagree with you.
Well, certainly it's the government taking away from one class of people to give to another. Well, forcibly, this is done forcibly through the tax basis.
Well, we do this all the time, but the classes to which we give, unfortunately, happen to be upper and middle classes at the present time.
Yeah, you can use different names for it, but nonetheless, a guaranteed annual income takes away from the constructive working person and gives to those who are not willing to work.
Now, Mr. Chaffee, we have a number of other calls, and we'd like to have a chance. We would like to give a chance to the other listeners to respond.
Right,
thank you very much for calling, sir. This is Night Call in New York. Our telephone number is area code 212-749-3311. That's 749-3311. Our next call is again from Southman, Indiana, and from the same radio station, WSBT, Mrs. Warner. Welcome to Night Call.
I'm afraid that my ideas are similar to Mr. Chavez, although I have no connection with him. But I don't quite fully understand their guaranteed wage, whether that is, like Mr. Chavez says, a handout. I believe that every person has a right to work. And I believe if there's not enough work, that we should have public works of some kind to give them, you know, an opportunity to make an honest living. But I don't believe in handouts of $30 million, you know, handouts. Could you correct me on that? Could you educate me?
Well, let me say this, that... First of all, the 30 million people that we're talking about who are poor in this country, and some estimate that there are more than that, half of them are children. A good many of them are physically handicapped. Many of them are too old to work. Some cannot work. And, of course, within the technological advances that are being made in our society, a good many people are feeling this, the phasing out of their jobs. This is not only happening to people who previously just did manual labor, but it's happening to people in other kinds of employment. And I'm sure you understand that in South Bend, Indiana, where there have been corporations who have been phased out because they were not able to be competitive and the society in which we have the kind of productive capacity that we have. Consequently, if the studies are true, that we are going to reach that stage by the year 2000 as an example, and a lot of things are going to happen between now and then in by way of production, but we will reach that point where 2% of the population, it is said, will be able to produce everything that we need. Now the question is, are 98% of the people who are going to be able to devote themselves to other kinds of work, things we've not called work, are we going to say that they do not deserve to live in dignity and with the sense of their own humanity so that we can mutually respect one another? So we're not talking about handouts. We're talking about something that we in this country have produced together. And many of these minority groups, black, Mexican Americans, and so forth, have really contributed over long periods of time to what we now enjoy, but they have not enjoyed the benefits.
Can I interrupt?
Yes, you may.
I am on Social Security myself.
Yes, ma'am.
But I do believe, you know, before I would want to take money, I would want to do some service as a volunteer. I think that each
Very
one
good.
Of us should contribute something to the community or to our world in which we live.
Beautiful.
And I believe that there should be just a little tag on that price.
I don't
think...
That
each one should contribute something according to his ability.
Well, ma'am, there is no tag on your Social Security, I don't believe.
No.
And yet you feel the way you do.
Of course,
and
you paid in on Social Security. I look at it as an insurance.
Well, it's an insurance, ma'am, but there have been contributions that have been made by other people in order to get this program off of the ground.
Mrs. Warner,
yeah.
I'm sorry, we have a number of other calls.
All right.
Thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
This is Night Call in New York. We will take a call this time from Boston, and Mr. King, who is listening to Night Call over radio station WBUR. Welcome to Night Call, sir.
Good evening, Mr. King.
Yeah, and I just want to make this a brief question because I know you're running out of time. There are a number of other calls. Were the leaders of the Poor People's March, were they disappointed in perhaps the turnout or, you know, sort of the interest in the New England area? Because I remember when Dr. Abernathy was up here, I think, maybe about close to 3 weeks ago now. Only a, you know, really a relatively handful of people turned out for the rally.
Right. Well, this, of course, varies, as you know, from place to place. I've been at rallies where they couldn't get all of the people into the building. They couldn't even get, accommodate them on the sidewalk. So it does, as you know, vary. I suppose that a leader of a movement like this has to be prepared just as political leaders are prepared, and as preachers with himself must be prepared for small turnouts at points and good responses in other places. I don't know, I have not heard them say that they were particularly disappointed with the New England area. I have not heard that.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, sir. We'll take our final call of the evening. No more calls. All right, thank you. We don't have enough time for any additional calls, Reverend Adams, but we can give you about a minute to kind of summarize the Poor People's Campaign in Washington and perhaps advise our listeners what they can do to help.
Well, Mr. Shields, I believe that the Poor People's Campaign is something that we across this land should be prepared to support. I believe that is a non-violently oriented, as I said when I began, program that is meant to capture the kinds of attention that this nation needs to have focused upon the very serious problems that we face, and which Dr. King knew, and which other leaders have surely been able to be aware of, but which we cannot do anything about until we have a response, a strong, supportive response from across this entire country. I feel that if people really want to help, they can make this known, of course, to their congressmen. They can have their own little Poor People's Campaign right where they sit by how they communicate this to their own representatives. And I would say also that financial contributions to the Southern Christian Leadership Conference at 334 Auburn Avenue Northeast, Atlanta, Georgia, would help in this campaign.
Reverend Adams, we want to thank you so much for being with us this evening on Night Call.
Thank you, Mr. Shields. It was my privilege.
This is Del Shields in New York on Night Call, and on Monday, Dr. Charles Spivey, the black man in charge of the Department of Social Justice at the National Council of Churches, will be our guest, and we certainly hope that you'll be with us. Until then, we do wish you a very pleasant weekend. This is Del Shields in New York. Good night and peace.
Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Monday night, same time, same station. Dr. Charles Spivey, the black man in charge of the Department of Social Justice at the National Council of Churches on religion and race. Listen Monday night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, and National Urban Coalition.